Jury selection begins in the Letitia Stauch case. Buster Murdoch speaks and says, "Leave me alone." It's always their own words that get them. A Colorado dentist poisons his wife, kind of a developing story. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, everyone. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. You know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't. Like if you do. Leave me a comment. Hit that little bell for notifications. And remember, you can listen to us anytime on any of your favorite podcasting apps. Just have to search for Crime Talk. All right. Let's support the people. Let's support Crime Talk. Go to crimetalksearch.com. Sign up for that background subscription service today. I'm telling you, you're going to be happy you did. Information. Knowledge is power. That's why you come to Crime Talk. All right? Go to Crime Talk Search. You're going to be able to get a background subscription service where literally while you wait, you're going to be able to find out if somebody is married, divorced, whether they have a criminal history. Are they on a federal registry? Any kind of registry, for goodness sakes. Have they told you the truth? Check them out. If somebody new or important is coming into your life, you need to check them out. Go to crimetalksearch.com. All right, let's go ahead and begin the docket for March 20th, 2023, and let's open the record. First on the docket, the murder trial for Letitia Stauch. That's right, this case that we've been following for years. She's the Colorado Springs woman accused of murdering her stepson back in January of 2020. Well, it's finally going to begin down there in Colorado Springs, also known as El Paso County. Jury selection is scheduled to get underway today, and it is expected to take at least 2 weeks. And opening arguments are scheduled to commence on April 3rd. Now, Letitia Stauch has pled not guilty by reason of insanity after changing her plea from originally, which was not guilty, in February of last year. Now, it is unclear if the court received the final reports from the defense insanity expert or insanity expert that was supposed to be turned over weeks, if not months ago. And the court basically said, we're going to move forward anyway. I'm assuming they have it. But remember, the defense needs that witness to basically say, yes, she did it because it's an affirmative defense. But she suffered from some sort of mental disease or defect that basically couldn't allow her to form right from wrong. Yeah, we'll see how that works out for them. You never know. Anyway, for those who aren't familiar with the case, she faces charges including first-degree murder, child abuse resulting in death, tampering with evidence, and tampering with a deceased human body regarding the killing of her stepson, 11-year-old Gannon Stauch. Gannon Stauch was reported missing by Letitia on January 27th of 2020, the day she allegedly killed the boy in his bedroom. This is all according to the police and prosecutor's theory of the case. And Letitia Stauch apparently told the police at the time that Gannon had gone to play at a friend's house and he never returned. She was arrested on March 2nd in connection with her stepson's disappearance, and Gannon's body was ultimately discovered in a suitcase by a construction worker on March 18th in Pace, Florida, underneath a bridge on the side of the highway. Autopsy reports that Gannon died from a gunshot wound and a skull fracture, according to the autopsy, and prosecutors allege that Letitia Stauch shot and stabbed the boy, then drove his body to an area near Colorado Highway 105 and South Perry Park Road, and dumped the body, later driving it to Florida. According to the arrest affidavit in Letitia Stauch's case, it alleges that Gannon Stauch disappeared. Letitia Stauch texted her daughter to buy carpet cleaning supplies, trash bags, and baking soda, which prosecutors say were used to ultimately clean up the crime scene. An investigator said that Letitia Stauch's internet history showed she wasn't happy with her marriage to Gannon's father and had some degree of resentment towards the family as the step-parent in the family. She also had appeared to be researching a move to an apartment in another state days before Gannon was killed. Now, the judge in this case is a judge by the name of Judge Gregory Werner, and he said two members of the press, one print and one electronic, will be allowed in the courtroom for jury selection only. Only audio recording will be allowed during this particular process. And as of right now, no cameras will be allowed in the courtroom during the trial. Originally, we thought it was going to be available on WebEx, but more than likely, if the WebEx camera is on, that's simply for family members who are going to be unable to appear. That's the way I've seen it kind of working lately. Judges aren't thrilled about having cameras in the courtroom. I personally think it's a good thing. I think everybody raises their game, so to speak. And this is an important case. I mean, this was something kind of just kind of beginning right there at the beginning of COVID. There was a lot of stuff that, well, I think the public just has a right to know. The public has a right to know, one, let's see the evidence if she did it. If she didn't do it, that's okay. If she was insane, let us hear that evidence as well. We'll continue to follow the case. It's going to take a while to get a jury, and I'm not really sure why. Honestly, I mean, I get it. It's a homicide case. I think the longest jury selection I've ever had took 5 days. I think we blocked out 5 days, but really it took about 3.5. It usually goes faster than you think it will. Only once can I think of a case where it actually went longer than anybody actually expected. But it is the most important part of the trial because you have to make sure that both sides start from at the same point. No juror can be given any side kind of a head start in that race to see if they can, you know, prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. So we'll have to wait and see. Next on the docket, Buster Murdoch denies any involvement with the death of Stephen Smith. Now, Buster Murdoch on Monday, today, publicly denied being involved in the death of a teenager. Now, Mr. Buster Murdoch was the sole surviving son of convicted murderer Alex Murdoch, and he issued a statement through, guess what? His attorneys, guess who? Dick Harpulian and Jim Griffin. And they're refuting any rumors that he was involved in Stephen Smith's July 2015 death. The statement was issued hours before Stephen Smith's mother and her attorneys held a press conference. They said, quote, "This has gone on far too long. These baseless rumors of my involvement with Stephen and his death are false. I unequivocally deny involvement in his death, and my heart goes to the Smith family." Now, if you don't recall, in 2015, Smith's body was found in the middle of a rural road in Hampton County. Smith was a classmate of Buster Murdoch, and Smith's death was ruled a hit and run, but his family has called for the body to be exhumed and for a new autopsy to be performed. Sandy Smith, Stephen's mother, started an online fundraiser to pay for this process of having the body exhumed. And as of Monday, that GoFundMe page has $65,000. They were only expecting to raise $15,000. Now, attorneys Eric Bland and Ronnie Richter of the Bland Richter Law Firm held a news conference about Stephen's death. At the conference, the law firm said it was representing Sandy Smith in the investigation, and Smith's family believes that Stephen was murdered, and they want an unbiased look at his body in an independent autopsy to accurately determine his cause of death, the law firm stated at their little news conference. Now, during the news conference, Bland said, listen to this, "There's no indication that anyone from the Murdoch family was involved in Smith's death." Now, a lot of people have been throwing other rumors out there and allegations, but the attorneys know, yeah, you can get sued for defamation. So you see how they, yes, we want an independent investigation, and we're not saying anything about any of those Murdoch boys doing anything wrong. Let me know what you think. Anyway, while investigating the death of Buster's mother and younger brother, Maggie and Paul, the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, also now known to everybody as SLED, announced that it had uncovered new information about Stephen's death. SLED hasn't said what that information was, and there's been obviously no arrests or anything along that line. But the Murdochs have never been officially linked to Smith's death by anyone, particularly SLED. And SLED has never charged Buster Murdoch with a crime related to Smith's death, nor have they said he's the target of an investigation. Buster also said in his statement, I have tried my best to ignore these vicious rumors about my involvement in Stephen Smith's tragic death, but that continues to be published in the media as I grieve over the brutal murder of my mother and brother. He said that he loves them so much, and I miss them terribly. I haven't spoken up until now because I want to live in private while I cope with the deaths and my father's incarceration. Before, during, and since my father's trial, I have been targeted and harassed by the media and followers of the story. I am requesting that the media immediately stop publishing these defamatory comments and rumors about me. Obviously, we give Buster Murdoch the presumption of innocence. He has never been charged of anything. And if somebody's got the, you know, in America, you just don't get to throw out allegations and not make them stick. If you got it, you charge it. If you don't, you don't. But the public smear of an allegation can be, frankly, just as bad as actually being charged. So if the government has it, they should charge it. If they don't have enough information, then you know what? They should probably make a statement saying we don't consider him a target. Or if he is, let him know so that he can do what he needs to do. And in this case, Mr. Harptoulian and Mr. Griffin give a new meaning to the word family attorney. Anyway, got a little more Murdoch news. A Georgia auction house has announced that it will sell items from the Murdoch's family home in Carlton County. Now, the sale is going to be hosted by Liberty Auction, an auction house operated out of Pembroke, Georgia, and it will be held at 4 p.m., according to the company. Now, it's unclear whether the items came from the Moselle property or another property that the Murdochs possessed. Anyway, items from the sale were lamps, dishware, and leather living room sets and pillows monogrammed with Maggie Murdoch's initials. The company said photos showing more of the items for sale will be posted at the auctions house Facebook page later this week, and the hunting lodge is currently under contract for $3.9 million. Let me know, would you buy that place? I would. Man, it's just gorgeous down there. I mean, sure, you got to get by the whole three people have died there that we know about, but it is a beautiful property. Anyway, the auction house will not be taking online or absentee bids, so you must be present to win. Next in the docket, how many times have I said it's always the defendant's own words that come back and bite them? Yes, it is, because they will be taken out of context. They will be misconstrued in every way possible. Let me give you an example. A Family Feud contestant gave prosecutors what they believe to be some new information in a case against him for allegedly murdering his wife. Where did it come from? His response to the biggest mistake you made at your wedding. That's right. A guy by the name of Timothy Blyfnik, who was arrested on charges of 2 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of home invasion, taped an episode of the Family Feud back in 2019. Steve Harvey, the host, put him on the spot when he was his turn to answer the question. What was the biggest mistake you made at your wedding? His answer was saying I do. Well, last month, when his strange wife, Rebecca Blyfnik, was found deceased in her home, well, guess who was charged? Timothy has been charged with breaking into her home and shooting her multiple times. The couple was living apart and in the process of a divorce. Blyfnik's answer triggered gasps from the audience as he added that he loves his wife. And remember, the answers are based upon the 100 members from the studio audience who said, I do, was the biggest mistake. It was the second most popular answer. Does it really give, is it a confession? No, it's not. But it shows you how everyone will go back and look at everything they said to see if it has anything to do with what someone is being charged with. Taken out of context, misconstrued, it happens all the time. So keep your mouth shut and never let the world know you don't love your wife. Okay? Don't do that. Always tell the world you love your wife. Another guy who may have had some doubts, allegedly, is a dentist from Colorado, and he is facing charges of first-degree murder in the death of his wife, a mother of 6 children, after she was suffering from a severe headache and it ultimately left her brain dead. Dentist, or Dr. James Tolliver Craig, was taken into custody early Sunday morning, days after he allegedly drove his 43-year-old wife to the hospital. The charges stem from about 8:45 p.m. on Wednesday when Craig drove his wife to the local hospital because she was complaining of severe headaches and dizziness. Shortly after arriving at the hospital, the wife's condition deteriorated rapidly, and she was ultimately placed on a ventilator in an intensive care unit. She was declared medically brain dead a short time later. Authorities said that further investigation revealed that the victim's sudden death was linked to poison. Now, obviously, we're going to give the good doctor the presumption of innocence that he's entitled to under the United States Constitution. But apparently, after doctors made the decision to take the woman off of life support, police obtained a warrant for first-degree murder. From their police statement, it says, "When the suspicious details of this case came to light, our team of officers and homicide detectives tirelessly worked to uncover the truth behind the victim's sudden illness and death," said the division chief, Mark Hildebrand. "It was quickly discovered this was in fact a heinous, complex, and calculated murder. I am very proud of our major crimes homicide unit's hard work in solving this case and pursuing justice for the victim. I hope he hadn't been on the TV show Family Feud. Anyway, doctor, if you see this, call me. You may need some help, okay? Keep your mouth shut. Remember, everything is being recorded while you're there in jail, particularly those calls. Now, I'm joking when I say that, but, you know, some people think I won't be. I don't need any more homicide cases right now. I've got them up to here. Anyway, my guess is, there was confession. Just going to go on a limb there. We'll wait and see what happens. We'll give them the presumption of innocence, though.
Like many Americans, we got a dog during the pandemic. My quarantine dog, Miss Winnie the Bulldog. Now, Miss Winnie has grown accustomed to being around us all the time. When we were leaving the house, Winnie would have extreme anxiety, so we decided to look for natural products to help with her anxiety. We looked for the highest quality CBD treats, and we were not satisfied, and neither was Winnie. So we created a high-quality CBD product that absorbs faster and provides the required results faster. Baked in Colorado, CBD treats and beverage enhancers are made with nanotechnology. The nanotechnology makes the CBD extraction more pure, also allows for Baked in Colorado products to work faster. Baked in Colorado products can help reduce your pet's anxiety, ease joint pain, and help with your dog's skin problems. Go to our online store and see what Baked in Colorado product is best for your dog. When you order at bakedincolorado.com, enter code Winnie and receive 15% off your first order. We have a 30-day money-back guarantee. If your dog does not experience the desired results in 30 days, return the product and we will refund your money. No questions asked.
And then finally today, our dumb criminal contestant of the day, who this contestant was sent into us by a subscriber. So Deputy Donald Warney and his canine by the name of Zion were apparently sitting in the parking lot of a Waffle House. Now, is it just me, or does it seem like Waffle House is in the news a lot for a lot of dumb stuff going on there? Anyway, so this was in Fayetteville. Well, the canine apparently started to indicate the detection of drugs nearby as the officer was, you know, sitting there, probably enjoying those hash browns with onions and cheese. You got to admit, they make some good hash browns there at the Waffle House. Anyway, Deputy Warney got out of his car, and he could smell the odor of marijuana. Where was it coming from? A Chevrolet Tahoe in the parking lot had a very strong odor of marijuana. The driver opened the door, got out of the car. While speaking with the police, the driver admitted to recently smoking some marijuana and that he was dealing with, you know, another case going on right now where he was charged with the distribution. Needless to say, the officers ultimately were able to search the car, and what did they find? 144 grams of marijuana in 10 individual plastic bags. Yes, that would be indicia of possession with intent to distribute. Needless to say, the unidentified driver was arrested. But ladies and gentlemen, kids of all ages, kids, this is why you shouldn't do drugs. First, you start smoking dope. Then you start listening to loud music. And the next thing you know, you're bad-mouthing your country. And then the next thing you know, you're sitting in a Waffle House parking lot getting high next to a police car. Not smart. Anyway, our unidentified driver, and you know, they're in North Carolina. I don't think they have as liberal as marijuana laws as they do in Colorado. And so I have never seen anything like marijuana users. It is a cult. When Colorado legalized marijuana, we got all the potheads who would tell you that they're here to smoke pot. They had no jobs, they had no skills, but they were here to smoke pot and get stoned, and stoned they got. And now most of them are homeless down on the 16th Street Mall in downtown Denver, which looks like a war zone. Well, then it was all legalized, and all the budristas, that's right, at the local Starbucks, that's right, it's a real name of a place here. So maybe they're getting jobs. I don't know. I don't think so. Most of the guys, and I've represented some people in the marijuana industry, most of them that sell the stuff don't use it, just like all good distributors of narcotics, just saying. Anyway, kids, don't do it. Don't smoke dope, okay? Nothing good comes from it, just saying. But your dog, you can get CBD treats that have extracted the bad stuff and kept all the good stuff. Just saying. Anyway, thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.